We're back. Hour three, and Doug O'Neill is going to join us. And as we wait for Doug, I should mention one thing I haven't got to yet. The future wager pool wrapped up last night at 6, and I hope some people got some plays in. I played three horses that ended up at, and actually I put them in. I didn't even wait till Saturday, Sunday. I knew, it would get to be 6 and I would forget. So I actually put them in on Saturday. Senior Buscador, 34-1. And Mutasabek, why not? 48-1. And because Doug O'Neill's joining us, Hot Rod Charlie, 41-1. And we'll get an update on Hot Rod Charlie. And Doug O'Neill joins because he had a terrific Saturday with the impressive maiden winner early on the Santa Anita card, the great one going a mile. And I don't care if it was, you know, a four horse field or not, the way he did it was impressive. And because sons and daughters of horses that Doug trains gets another chance. Wild Man Jack came back in the Palos Verdes and wins that and wins it well. Doug O'Neill, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Well, thanks for having me.
Not at all. I knew right away Saturday that we were going to have to talk because, you know, Fancy Maiden looks like, and think about the obviously the potential to dive into classic trail opportunities. But let's start with Wild Man Jack, actually. And nice to get this one back after kind of a weird year last year. Some great moments and some frustrations.
Well, you're right. Yeah, he's a son of Golden Sense. That like you said, we had his sire here. So that makes it even extra special. And Glenn Sorgenstein, who bred and owns Wild Man Jack, has just been super patient with him. And this horse has been to Dubai with us and Kentucky and all over the place. So he's a special horse, really cool horse. And he's got a few little blips on his form, but, we've got good excuses for those races. And it was great to see him come back and run the way he did on Saturday.
Well, and you mentioned the trip to Dubai, and of course, what really was really too bad, the opportunity to potentially win that Al-Khawaz Sprint that got canceled, and that was after he had gone and had won the prep. So that was a frustrating portion, but came back and won the Daytona and was a good second in the Eddie D. He had his moments as the year went on, and then of course the Breeders' Cup try, where I've heard from about, let's see, what it was, a 14 horse field. I think there's about 11 people feel like they might have won that race. Well, Case, did we lose Doug?
Oh, there we go. I lost there you there for a second.
Yeah, I lost you. Exactly. I said, I just was saying that, between the Al-Khawaz, which, there's every reason to believe he would have won the Al-Khawaz after the prep, and Breeders' Cup, he got to the lead. There's about 8 or 10 horses probably could have won that Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Yeah, no, I agree. He ran a really good race there and turned for home. I thought he had it, and it was just that stretch never ended. Seemed like the longest stretch ever, but we were so proud of him. And he's not a real big horse, kind of lightly made, and races need to unfold, fairly good for him to see his best efforts. And like the race the other day, Abel, it just had him in a perfect spot. Everything just unfolded perfectly. And, the horses that looked really good on form just didn't happen to fire their best races that particular day. So everything just came together, and it was so nice to see, because we always thought of him as just the way he's built, as being kind of more of a turf sprinter. But, man, his couple dirt races are are pretty solid at this point, so we might have to consider just keeping him on the dirt. We'll play that by ear.
Well, and what, a 104 buyer, which is, yeah, you know, for him, even eclipses the 100, which was, yeah, the only triple digit he'd had was the 100 in the Daytona. So this is, you know, certainly a division that has got kind of a wide open feel to it.
Big time. No, it is. It's ripe for somebody to jump in and be a leader. And we're open. He's the horse, but he came out of it in good shape. And again, Glenn is so patient with his horses, and the fact that we ran him back so quickly between these last two races is just very telling at how good Wildman Jack was doing. But at this point, we'll give him plenty of time before his next one. And actually got a call yesterday from the Dubai people inviting him to the dirt sprint and the turf sprint. So we'll kind of play that by ear as well. So we got options, which is a beautiful thing.
Well, and then schedule-wise, what's the first West Coast Grade 1? Triple Bend?
Ooh, that's a great question. That sounds about right. That's not, which, geez, maybe the end of February. I'm so bad with the stakes.
Here, I'll pull it up. I'll pull it up, and we'll see.
I need to hire you, Steve. Well, you're like the stakes coordinator.
No,
Jim, they got a great stakes coordinator.
They do.
Awesome.
Exactly. So here, I'm just pulling it up now. Let's thumb through, and tap into mid-January, and here we go. All right, we got the next set. Well, those both going to go long, and there's the boys. There's the Santa Monica for the girls, and Spring Fever. The Paso. You know, Hammer's next, so Hammer might probably the San Carlos. The San Carlos is 7/8, okay, which comes on Big Cap Day. So and then on Santa Anita Derby Day, you've got the. You actually don't have the. That's interesting. You don't have.
Yeah, they moved it around, I think.
Yeah.
But no, we may even just sit on him and consider running him in Dubai right off.
Interesting, off the brink.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Give him plenty of time and freshen him up. So he deserves all the time that may be needed. That's for sure. He's family, that horse. We love him.
Well, of course, 5 years old and a gelding and, you know, kind of a partial homebred with the WC team and yeah. Glenn. Actually, yesterday, when I put up the figures from Saturday, I think I called Glenn Sorgenson instead of Sorgenstein.
Oh, that's all right. That's tomato, tomato. That's close enough.
It's an interesting name, too, yes. Sorgenstein. It was a hell of a nice day for and weekend for the whole barn, because let's talk about the Nyquist colt and the breakthrough performance. And of course, you'd already gotten him black type as a 2-year-old in the Los Al Futurity behind Spielberg, comes back here and the 1 mile distance. Understand it was a short field and all, but certainly did it nicely.
Oh, big time. Yeah, that was impressive. And, he had been training like he was going to run a big one, but you never foresee or you never think of that prior to the race of them running like that. But, he ran dynamite. And, again, a couple highly touted horses there, I think, just didn't fire their best races. But we took advantage of that. And credit to Abel for another beautiful ride. He's on a roll right now. I don't think there's a hotter rider in Southern California than Abel Sadio right now.
One of the things about this that is notable, I mean, he had gotten to leads in that turf try at Del Mar in November, and then as well in the race at Los Al. And in this case, he was seemingly amenable to Sadio, and Sadio's been riding him for the most part. He didn't seem anxious to get the lead in here.
You know, it's so funny. You're so right. And You know, we had a lot of times that puts the edge on horses and makes them sometimes a little bit more accelerator stuck, but it's made him more relaxed. And Leandro Mora, who's the brains of the outfit here, mentioned some cotton in his ears a few races back too, and we've done that, and that's made him a lot more focused as well. So yeah, he's really maturing into a top 3-year-old, and you know, like his father, these Nyquists are just, they're freakishly talented. They're just, you could just tell it's in their genes. They're so competitive. They're so natural, and yeah, they're great in the stall. They save their energy when they need to, and you put a rider up and you put them in competition, and it's they're tough. So he's got all the attributes of a real good one, and again, you just got to keep him injury free like any athlete. And if we do, I think he's gonna have a big say in the 3-year-old races this year.
A couple of things, Eric Johnson, one of the major partners in here, Niall Brennan, who had him from yearling to 2-year-old in training. Did Niall, I assume that he came back in after the horse sold at OBS?
He did, yeah. You know, we've got tons of respect for Niall, and Dennis, when he goes to the sales, he always stops by and sees Niall and looks at his consignment. And of course, just being a son of Nyquist, it intrigued Dennis, and then just listening to Niall talk about the colt also intrigued him. So, yeah, when they got a deal together, and somewhere or another, there was like a little missing hole there in ownership, and Niall said, "Well, shoot, I'll stay in." And I was like, "Really?" And what a vote of confidence that is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really Niall. He pitched his horse to us way early on, and man, has he been right. And it's just a great group of guys. Dr. Al Linderman out of Arkansas is in on him. Bill Strauss of Del Mar, and of course Eric Johnson. So it's a great group of guys, and a really special horse.
So I guess Linderman is Train Wreck Al.
That's him. Yeah, it's so funny. If you had some intestinal issues and needed a top surgeon, he'd be your guy. But if you wanted to go have a beer and watch a game, he'd also be your guy. he's got all the just a fun, cool, celebrates life, but he also helps people add a few days to their life as well. There in Arkansas, he's a great doctor and great friend, and he's been with us a couple of years. And what's been awesome with Dr. Al is we haven't had a lot of luck, and he just keeps like, you know what, just do right by the horse. We're having fun. This is great. And just to have him be part of a horse like the Great One, too, it makes it all that much better. It's just great stuff.
Well, I think at some point they're on opposite coasts for now, but it is going to be interesting if you run into Gretzky the Great. At some point, we'll have the two Gretzky named horses, the 2 3-year-olds, on a parallel track potentially.
That would be cool. Yeah, I think so many of us who love hockey, if you're old enough, you can't help but think of Wayne. You know, watching Wayne, guys like Poetry on Ice there, man. When he played, it was just unbelievable, the Michael Jordan of hockey. So, it's pretty cool. And I know Eric's friendly with Wayne, and Eric's got a good friend named Tyson Berry. He's really good friends with Wayne. So, in a dream world for me, being a huge hockey fan and Gretzky admirer, it'd be great if he jumped in a few percentage just to be part of it. But that's kind of a rumor that I'm starting, but I don't think there's any truth to it at this point.
Well, and if you want a good Gretzky story, ask Pribman when you see Jay maybe this weekend about his story about running into Gretzky after a big game at the I'm going to say the Forum. I don't know if it was the Forum at that point.
Yeah,
but,
it was Fabulous Forum right across from Hollywood Park. Yep.
There you go. And Jay ran into Gretzky and family. What's the actress's name? The from
His wife?
Flamingo. Yeah, from Flamingo Kid. I'm going to draw a blank on her, but
entertainment trivia is not my
Well, Jay after the game headed to the Apple Pan, and and there he's waiting against the wall at the Apple Pan, and either he walked in or the Gretzky's were already there, or they came in when Jay took me to Apple Pan for the first time, he told me that story. He said, "You know who I saw here, talked to here." It was Gretzky. It was a good story.
Cool play. It's a legendary, and it's a small little place, but, man, there's some legends. My father-in-law bumped into John Wooden about, 30, 40 years ago in there, so he loves telling his Apple Pan John Wooden story. So that's good stuff.
I love it. We should start a Twitter with nothing but
Apple Pan story.
Who I saw at Apple Pan. Exactly.
Yeah.
I've had my share of celeb sightings especially when you're in LA. LA and New York. That's where you're going to get your South Florida. There's plenty of places. Too funny. How quickly? What do you got? The Lewis, probably the Lewis, right? For him or San Felipe?
Well, with this weekend, we've got the Lewis, but with Hot Rod Charlie and Wipe the Slate. Wipe the Slate, the son of Nyquist for Paul Redham, and
right.
Hot Rod Charlie's a group of good guys that own him. He's the one who ran second. Like you said, you bet him 41-1. I like those odds.
Yep.
For the Derby, but so we're. We're a little bit on hold. I think we're going to be fine this weekend. I don't know about Friday. Friday might be a day they might decide
some weather.
The weather. They're talking about. I know, but it's a long season, and I think we've all gotten used to if they got to cancel a day here or there, it's okay. They can pick it up down the road, and the management's done great about horse first. So if the Dennis Moore and his crew who handles the track deems it safe, then here we go. But if they want to wait a day, then we will. But yeah, I think the Bob Lewis should be this weekend, and we got a couple in there.
So Charlie goes this weekend.
Yep. And so with Wipe the Slate, and then the great one will probably. I need to talk to the boys on that one, but we'll probably wait to the sand. It's San Felipe on March 6th, I believe, will be kind of the next race we'll target for him.
On Big Cap Day. And actually, we should mention Wipe the Slate. Wipe the Slate was actually 87-1.
God, he's these Nyquists are just, you can't take any credit as a trainer when you get a Nyquist. They're self-made athletes. So it makes everyone around them look smarter. And, he's just a natural as well. So he broke his maiden in the second out impressively. And we are jumping into deep waters here, first time against winners. But being a son of Nyquist, he has worked 112 and change the other day here with Mario on him. And, even though Hot Rod Charlie's got better credentials, I wouldn't say Wipe the Slate couldn't win. So I think we got two strong entries there.
Nice. Well, and Hot Rod Charlie, I was joking last week when we were talking about these fields, the future wager field. There's a famous hot dog joint in the Capital District, Hot Dog Charlie's. And I, every time I go to say Hot Rod Charlie, I've got to hold myself and check myself from calling him Hot Dog Charlie, because it's just, it's one of famous for years, little tiny hot dog with meat sauce.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. I was going to say we two culinary scores today between at the Apple Pan and on this side of the country. Hot Dog Charlie's. Doug, what a nice situation, you know, with the older horse and then, you know, these emergent 3-year olds. And, you know, you kind of seem well positioned for the season.
Very, very grateful right now, Steve. Yeah, it's couldn't be happier. And again, the main focus now, which is a daily basis here, is just doing what's right by the horse. And credit to these grooms and hot walkers and exercise riders that day in, day out, love on the horses. If these guys can stay injury free and a little bit of luck, we could be having a good spring, summer season here, hopefully.
Well, bring us up to speed on a couple before I let you go, too. Biddy Duke, who tried the La Brea.
Yeah. She you know, that we went out a little too fast early. I think they went 21 and change, and trying to go 7 furlongs going 21 and change is going to be difficult. But she's just a cool filly. She's barely 15 hands, 900 pounds, but whew, she's Zenyatta-like on the track. She's just a monster and very confident filly. She's looking to run back. There's a race coming up. I think, I don't know the darn dates, but somewhere in mid-February. But she's doing really well, and look forward to her having a nice year this year.
What about, and I think we talked about this filly at some point late last year, that Ontario bred, the Munnings filly, Plum Sexy.
She ran the other day, ran her in a 6 or 6.5 on the flat on the grass.
Yeah, about 2 weeks
running
ago.
On it. Yeah, I think she ran third, but she's still on it. She's a cool filly. And I still don't think her light bulb's gone off yet. I think she's still in that early youthful, like, what's going on here stage. So I think there's definitely some improve into her, and hopefully she's got stakes quality, and we'll see her in some stake races coming up soon.
What about Strong Constitution, the 4-year-old?
He's a cool horse. He ran yesterday, and just Tiago Pereira, no knock on him, just got unlucky. Turner for home, a horse kind of stopped right in front of them, so he had to check, and he tried to re-rally. But cool horse, honest horse, turf, dirt, long, short, you name it, and So a little disappointing effort yesterday or trip yesterday, but look forward to seeing him bounce back and in a good spot, whatever that may be, in a month or two.
And I'm going to ask you about another one that ran, I think, not either last weekend or the weekend before. There's a 3-year-old filly by California Chrome, Adana.
Oh, Adana, yeah. She's doing good. She's a cool filly. She's like Biddy Duke. She's kind of a not the biggest of fillies. Unlike Biddy Duke, I don't think she's a stakes quality filly at this point. But we actually might even drop her down into the higher claiming ranks and just try to get her confidence built a little bit. But she's gutsy. She wants to beat you, and just need her times to kind of pick up a little bit. But we're excited about her, and hopefully we'll see her run the next week or two, maybe in the higher claiming level.
And one older gelding that's we've talked about for a long time, and a horse that probably could really use a return to the hill course potentially. That would be so nice for Blitzkrieg.
God, your lips to God's ears. I know I keep hoping that they decide to bring the hill course back, because it's the signature of San Anita. It's such a beautiful course, and I think now as they brought the new chute in where they're running 6 and 6.5 and they cross over the dirt, hopefully that will help bring that hillside back, at least for the higher end horses. And that would be great for Blitzkrieg. He's doing well. And I think in the meantime, we've got a race, I think it's called the Thunder Road, which that might be our man. Who do you got coming on next?
Hammer. That's Hammer. Yeah, Hammer's.
Oh, my Lord. A couple nights ago, still talking to me a little bit. But Hammer, being a huge Springsteen fan like me, I think he named that stake the Thunder Road. So Thunder Road stakes early February. I think is the next goal for Blitzkrieg.
Nice. Well, that's been a favorite for a long time, and you know, given you know his miler, you know, kind of construct, that's why I was thinking downhill. I mean, that's a perfect, you know, especially an older, well, you know, older gelding, and that they're tailor made for that.
Big time. We're gonna pray on that one.
Doug, terrific update, catching up on all the good things happening, and that includes now another three-year-old emerging, coming out of the weekend and the stakes win. Then you got, as mentioned, both Hot Rod Charlie and Wipe the Slate. A lot of good things going on. A hat full of horses. I didn't even talk about the Calbreds. You had a couple of recent maiden breakers among the Calbred ranks. And then here comes Wild Man Jack on the main track and the great one. So I think we're going to be talking regularly.
I love it, too. I appreciate everything. Thanks for having me on. And I love every time I'm in the car and you're on, I listen to you. So keep up the great work and say hi to Hammer for me.
He's going to join us next. Doug O'Neill, everybody. You follow Doggy you got it. Doug O'Neill 1 on Twitter. And, you know, I could have prompted Doug on, you know, he started talking about his staff. And, you know, Doug has been so instrumental, you know, during the rough patch and when it came to speaking up and helping organize the backstretch and the very nice work that was done in terms of supporting the entire backstretch community. A great, you know, really a great service Doug did and deserves everybody's appreciation. And Hammer sounds like he's in the background and he may have heard Doug O'Neill say hello.
I did. You know, Doug's miss a lot of people out there, but Doug's one of the you know few little inner circle guys that always had fun with and saw each other every once in a while outside the races and he's fun to be around. Him and his crew, they're always upbeat, that's one thing, and so always happy to hear about Doug. In fact, I texted him the other day. There's a horse in on next Saturday, a first time starter named Wheels, and that's Doug's nickname. So I texted him. I said, I just picture of the horse. They said, send small bills. We'll claim them. And he liked that. So you never know. It might be a long distance claim. But Doug's great. And it's funny you bring up, you know, you texted me this morning, you might have a hole and wanted me to tell a few stories. And I said, well, all right. And you mentioned Wayne Gretzky and you know, things, you know, how things trigger. Well, Gretzky, of course, he has been involved in the greatest sporting event that I have ever seen live. You know, I've been to a lot of things and the Miracle on Manchester back in, I had to look it up, back in 1982 and, at the Fabulous Forum, which got a little ink there a little earlier, but, back then the LA Kings were not really good, but they had an enthusiastic fan, group. And tickets were cheap, and you could go and scream and yell, and they were just getting to the edge of being good, and they'd get to the playoffs, and they'd either face Montreal, they hated Montreal Canadiens, and just never get by the first round. Well, 1982, Edmonton, of course, was hated. They're in the division, and they were hated down here in L.A., and they came to town, and and for the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, which, by the way, are the greatest live events in sports to begin with, Stanley Cup. But anyway, Gina, my wife at the time, I and a couple friends, we went to the game. I forget what game it was. Anyway, second, third game, but it was at L.A. against Edmonton. And Edmonton was ahead 5-0 with 10 minutes to go. And long story short, Marcel Dion, I think, tied it up with 10 seconds, and the place was going nuts. And they come out of the break into overtime, and I'll never forget Darrell Evans. We were sitting, like, perfectly when he took the shot, and boom, right in, and they end up winning the game 6-5 in overtime. And it was one of those you had to be there the whole game and go through the emotion, and everybody was hugging everybody. I don't think anybody left the Forum parking lot till 2 a.m. And it ended up going ahead and winning the series. They lost in the next round, but you mentioned Gretzky, and that's the first thing that comes to mind. But and then, of course, he ends up joining the Kings later, and you know. But the Edmonton Oilers were absolutely hated by the Kings back then. But that was a wonderful, that was great. But anyway, long time Kings story. But start out talking about claims. Guess how many claims we had in the first 3 days there at Oakland.
Oh, you know, I got all the charts, but I didn't add that up. What'd you? How many?
27.
So 9 a day.
I forget what a frenzy it is here, because A, they know the races are going to go, and B, they know the pots are big, and you know they like action here. So the first 3 days turned out good. We got two dry ones and then a wet one, and has a tendency to rain here on the days off. Every single time I think about taking the drive down to Vicksburg, Mississippi, to do a little Civil War stuff, and it's an overnighter. Every time, I never got there, it rained. And I tell you what, there were waves in the lake this morning. There was a storm coming by. So when you texted and said, hey, you know, can you come on? And I said, you know what, I'm not making the drive today, so I'd be glad to. But we got two good days in, and it didn't really rain during the races yesterday, and the track handles the water here so well. So, you know, first 3 days in, saw some interesting performances. Not interesting, but Caddo River on opening day for short leaf. You know, he took the time off and obviously pointed for these races, and he went off and, you know, ran out of the TV. And short leaf is John Ed Anthony, who, of course, has had some success here, and he's an Arkansan, and has won the Arkansas Derby a few times. Latest was with Pine Bluff, but that's 30 years ago. So he'll probably stick around and run in. I don't know if he'll run in the next one, but he'll probably show up in the Rebel. But Brad Cox and Florent Giroux kind of said, we're here, and, you know, went on to have a good weekend, as did Asmussen and Steve Asmussen and Ricardo Santana. And, you know, he talked about Florent Giroux coming here, and I think, you know, he's a top rider, obviously top 10 rider, no question. But he's going to ride here for 3 months on the dirt. He's going to leave here, and he's going to be better than he was coming in, for sure. And he's already kind of got the handle, and, you know, he's a good rider that waits and waits, and you can do that here if you have the horse and come running late. So, you know, Ricardo Santana is, you know, owns the place pretty much, but... you know, those two guys are going to have a fun battle all year, and as will Steve Asmussen and Brad Cox. But, you know, in 3 days, just start to meet.
Yeah, and, you know, between some of the things that we discussed with Jeff on Friday, and, you know, then keeping an eye, yesterday I wasn't as focused, but certainly on Friday and then on Saturday with, you know, Naira featuring the cross country pick five, was very interested in what was going on. So, enjoyed it. Yesterday I did tune in for the hidden scroll performance. You also had, you know, Caddo River on Friday, went off by himself. We'll see where that goes. And there was also, a couple other, there was another maiden race that I added, or it wasn't an allowance. Oh, that performance of the Asmussen, the second time starter on Saturday, Swift Shore. That was a very good follow up. You know, sometimes when a horse debuts and wins big and then, you know, disappears for a while, showing up in a spot like this, you know, you're not sure if they're just, you know, are they checking to see where they are with the horse, or does it say that they don't think, you know, the fact that the horse doesn't show up in a stake spot, does that mean that they don't really think he's that special? Well, that was a very good follow-up. I think he matched his debut figure, you know, if you're evaluating it that way. But I thought he looked very good in that allowance on Saturday.
Well, I agree with you, and, you know, had to shake free a little bit later in the stretch, but did and went on. And I think handicapping wise here, when, because the courses are coming from all over, and it really is tough early in the year. And what I've noticed, and I made a note last year and this year, money early is a little bit more telling here. Early in the betting cycle, excuse me, but also early in the season on horses has been very telling, and it was the first few days. Even Asmussen's win in the fifth season with Silver State. Now here's a horse coming off allowance win, and running against some pretty gritty horses that are stakes performers. I mean, Silver State immediately opened up as the favorite, I think odds on, and stayed there. Ended up going off at 4-5, and got the job done, albeit by a nose, but to hunka hunka burn and love. And there's been a couple other horses, even in regular races, that you're looking at them and they go, wow, these horses are taking money. They've all run well. So obviously, the word gets out on some of them that have been well pointed for the meet. So keep your eye on that. But watch film. Go back and watch these races when you're handicapping the next ones and see if they had a little trouble or what happened. Because you're going to need all the help you can get when you're handicapping here, because they come from all over. But it's a pretty cool place to watch races. We have a few thousand on hand, and I got to tell you, a few thousand is way better than zero. A little atmosphere as you walk around, people here, drinking a beer and, watching the races. So kind of cool. Hopefully, as we move along, more and more people will be able to come on site. But a good atmosphere, good opening, here in Hot Springs for the first 3 days.
Well, and we'll obviously get a chance as the week progresses to, dive into some of this. Glancing some of the less than the first half of the cards, the wins spread around pretty good. Didn't take Deodoro long after last year's frustrating season to strike early and often the first couple. You mentioned that result in the fifth season. I got to tell you, Hunk of Burning Love did all the heavy lifting. He gutted everybody that tried to chase, everybody that tried to test him before the turn. He absolutely ruined and just could not withstand the late charge. I mean, I put up I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I said, can Silver State allow Hunk of Burning Love to take a photo too and let him think he won? Because he did everything to win. And I got to tell you, not the gallop out, means a whole lot. But he did not pass the wire. He did not want to let Silver State buy him, a next jump. And what a nice job Broberg's done with that horse.
Yeah, no kidding. As a matter of fact, I did watch the gallop out of there, which I'm not a big gallop out watcher type of thing. But I ended up noticing, if you continue watching, Hunk of Burning Love went right on by as they went around the turn. He said, see you later. None of that. But David Cabrera, which I think JT mentioned, just got everything he could out of him.
And yep.
Keep your eye on him. He's going to win his share of races here. He wins races. No doubt about it.
Hammer, we'll talk, a lot on Friday going into the second week. I reached out to you too, because you and I were texting back and forth, and you've shocked me with your Larry King fan fanboy story. You gotta tell everybody about your interaction with Larry King.
Well, it's funny, it's like you got stories. It's funny when you tell stories that you tell all the time. It's fine. When I said I got stories, and these are stories that I've told in my head, but I've never really told them before. It was 30, 40 years ago type thing. But I said, I heard that Larry King passed away, and Larry King to me was an idol for me. It sounds really weird, right? Some Jewish broadcaster. What are you talking about? And I'm talking, you mentioned the TV show. I'm talking before TV.
I'm the radio.
Talking Larry King on the radio.
Yeah.
When, I didn't know who, nobody knew what Larry King looked like or what who he was. It didn't matter. But back in the late 70s and 80s, and been the most of the 80s. Anyway, Larry King did a radio show. I think it was called Mutual Radio at the time. And he was on, he was on like from midnight to 6 a.m.
That's right. Yeah.
Every night. I mean, I think that was East Coast time. So maybe 9 to 3 my time. So I did a lot of, you know, traveling and just driving and out and about. And, you know, I would listen to Larry King, and it's like he had something about his voice and something about, you know, his guests. And he had these great guests, whether he could have truck drivers on, he could have actors, he could have musicians. It didn't matter. He was a wonderful interviewer. But what was cool about it, at the end of his, he had like a, he would talk to his guests for a while, and then he would take calls about the guests, and then he would take calls about anything, and he would just would go on and on. And so I would call in or try and call in a lot. And back then, of course, if you were driving, you had to pull over to, you know, a rest area or somewhere and get on a phone booth and dial in. And back then, I don't know how I got it, but I had some kind of credit card that I ended up with, and I could call in and give this 15-digit number by heart and get in. And so you'd either wait, or if you had a screener, I was great at getting by the screener. So I would call in, and, you know, I can't remember everybody I talked to. I remember talking to Sylvester Stallone's mom for something. Pretty wild. but then later on, at that time, I was working for a friend of mine up in the Bay Area. I was living in the East Bay, and he owned a couple grocery stores. And back then, I was, you know, having fun during the day, and I would work for him, and I was in the night crew. And it's the precursor to Molly Stone, so anybody up in the Bay Area knows Molly Stone, just where it came from. But so I would work from, you know, I don't know, midnight to 9 or, you know, 10 to 7 at night. And, you know, we have the radio on at night and stocking shelves and doing what you had to do. So everybody got their pick what to do. And I would pick, you know, we're listen to Larry King. And everybody, oh, you got to be kidding me. So we would listen, and I would every once in a while call in. But I got to call in one time, and he was asking, I need some suggestions for some guests. And I got through, of course. And I remember the crew going, oh, you got to be kidding me. So I said, you know, Jerry Garcia would be a great guest. And he wasn't real familiar. So I got to talk like 10, 15 minutes about Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead. And, you know, and he was like interviewing me because he wasn't sure. And that was like the greatest thing in the world to me. And I've just always liked his field. Then he went on TV and I didn't really care that much anymore. And I was busy and stuff anyway. But yeah, Larry, I love the radio anyway, and I still think it's the best medium out there. And you know, he said something, it's one of his quotes, and he probably has many, but this always got me, and I don't always adhere to it, but he said, I never learned anything while I was talking. And, you know, we talk a lot, but, you know, obviously meaning, you know, as an interviewer, ask the question and shut up. And let your interviewee do the talking, which he did very well. So every once in a while, I think about that when I'm in meetings or something like that. You know, listen, and then, you know, when you talk, you'll be heard. But anyway, that's, you know, it's not really a story, but, you know, the memories come back.
It's good. It's great.
King, it's just very cool.
No, I got a kick out of that when you said that you know, you used to call in, and I had my share of call in experience, but it, you know, it was all sports talk. So, you know, the Larry King style, you know, here's Rick in San Mateo. You know, it's
exactly. Yeah. You go, yes. All right. I'm on. I don't know. I just had a knack of getting through.
What about Hank Aaron? That also, you also made me curious when you said you had a Hank Aaron tie-in.
Wow. Right. So this is it's a Hank Aaron related story. And every time I think of Hank Aaron, and basically when every time I watch that replay of him hitting the home run, I think about this. So now this is really a story that's played out in my head, but I've never told it, so this will be interesting. So obviously in 1974 and around, anybody that's, you know, in the 60-ish area, you know, was a big sports fan, and, you know, the greatest there was one number in all the sports that anybody in the whole world knew, and that was 714. Obviously, 714 could be another number too. But let's talk about 714. The home run. You know, Babe Ruth, blah blah blah. And so when Hank Aaron was on his run for that, and they showed every game, they'd interrupt and watch him. I mean, I don't know who didn't watch that. Moment in sports. I mean, I wasn't a big Henry Aaron fan, Atlanta Braves fan. You know, I was a sports fan, and Henry Aaron. You know, it's funny. Henry Aaron was Henry Aaron. He wasn't Henry Aaron, the black guy, or you know, Johnny Bench wasn't Johnny Bench, the white guy, or Tony Perez wasn't Tony Perez, the Latin guy. Yeah, they were just players that you followed and liked and whatever. So, you know, watching, being involved. I remember sitting on my parents' floor, you know, watching it and jumping up and down and everything else. So during that. When he hits the home run, and everybody's seen the replay a million times, as he gets to second base, two guys come out of nowhere, out of the stands, and kind of run alongside of him till he gets to third base. You've all seen that a million times.
Sure.
So I watched that, and I said to myself, I got to do that. I said, that's really cool. Those guys were really cool. I need to find a spot to run out on the field and, like, be the guy, you know, be seen. Seriously. In my head, I didn't tell everybody, hey, I'm going to do that. It's to the back of my head. I said, you know what? I need to do that. So waited. And the Olympics were in town in 1984 and had friends come in, and friends from Cincinnati, and came in. And we literally went to every event. I mean, we were ticket buying and selling, cycling, boxing, everything. So really got into that. You know what? That wasn't the time. But a year later, another baseball record was going to come down, and it was Pete Rose going to break the hit record. And it was 1985, I think, in September, and he ended up tying the record in Chicago and didn't play the last couple of games because he had a home series coming up in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati at that time, I had friends in Cincinnati, good friends that I'd met traveling, and there was not a question that I was going to Cincinnati, and I was going to go be there, and I was going to jump out on the field. Seriously. Oh, this was in my head, and my friends that I went with didn't even know. So you get there, and it was a four-game series, and my buddy lived right across the Blue Bridge, the John J. Roebling Bridge, which obviously the Blue Bridge in Cincinnati is a replica of the Brooklyn Bridge, and Roebling designed and built the Brooklyn Bridge. So easy access. So the first game, we went over basically hoping that, you know, we could use that as reconnaissance and hoping that he didn't break the record that night, and kind of went over there. And it was very easy to get tickets. And, of course, back then, you know, we're kids. You buy the cheap seats and you get down to the front. I mean, that's just what we did. So it was very easy to get seats. And it turns out, I don't think he played the first game of the series. I think he was kind of giving the city time to get ready or whatever. So night number two, we go over the same thing, and we were, you know, got the lay of the land. So I'm wearing a tie-dye shirt so I could, you know, stand out, and we're cruising around and, you know, kind of waiting and getting ready, and kind of I'm up the aisle from the dugout, thinking to myself, surveying the crowd and security. And back then, there's not much security. And I'm just going to run down there, jump on the dugout, jump off the dugout, run over to first base, and, you know, whatever, no problem. So the game goes on, and we kind of make our way down. We're sitting a few rows behind the dugout, and we end up next to Ty Cobb's granddaughter or something, and then three or four of the Ty Cobb family. And we start talking to them, and they were so cool, and it was so, you know, like emotional, right? And sitting there going, wow. And Pete comes up for the last time. He doesn't get a hit. And I remember going, wow. Anyway, it doesn't happen. So the next night we go, we're in the same position, first inning, sure enough, he got the hit, and I froze. And you know what? I couldn't do it. It was so emotional. After talking to them the night before, I think I might have done it the second night. But we were down there. I'm poised. I'm thinking he's on first base. They're jumping up and down. I could have easily got on top of the dugout. There was one overweight security guard. I remember I could run by him. But it was such an emotional moment that I got caught up in, and I couldn't do it. My friend from there, Scotty Wolf, and his brother Dusty.
Too funny.
I couldn't do it, but I'm thinking to myself, this was the one moment that I could have done it, and then obviously I matured a little bit and said it's over. But so every time, literally to this moment, every time that I watch that replay, I see those guys and I think about me in my tie-dye shirt getting ready to, you know, jump on the field. But still have the ticket from that night, and you know, I have my Instamatic, of course, and we, you know, I still have some pictures from the night. Very, very cool. And you know, half hour celebration, and after the game I think we ended up in Newport.
Nice. Nice.
But anyway, so that's my two stories that you know, I think about when I think about Larry King and I think about Hank Aaron. So anyway.
I love it.
That's
I love it.
It. But a little,
well
little
done.
More, little more reckless back then, but still had a lot of fun.
Hammer, this was great. I appreciate it, and a great start to Oaklawn season. We'll check in on Friday and look to the second week, and we'll talk then. And I hope you get to go. Hope you get to Vicksburg.
We'll get to Vicksburg. Yes, we will. All right. If you talk to Tommy Ventura, ask him about Crandon, the horse that won the last at Tampa last night.
Well, Jimmy wrote to me. I'm going to get Tommy tomorrow now for the sale. So we'll talk to him tomorrow. Rick Hammerly, everybody, closing out a busy, fast 3 hours with Doug O'Neill, John Kimmel, Brendan Walsh as well, and Mig. And, of course, Mig with Kimmel, too, which was a lot of fun. Plenty more to do tomorrow. We got to get Pletcher in here, and Brad Cox will be back up in Kentucky. We got to catch up on the situation with the HHR equipment, which is a nightmare, and a bunch more. All right. Good luck with your plane today. Limited, obviously, limited opportunities of action today, but week's just getting going. Thanks for tuning in. Replay tomorrow. 6 to 9 here on the network and at the website in a little bit. Good luck if you're playing. I'll talk to you in the morning.
You have to go killing all the bees.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.